League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Yeah, that's another thing I was trying to do today, thinking of what other goals were remotely qualified to go up against Ali's.
Eric Edmond.
Welcome to episode 27 of the Tottenham Way podcast. I'm Tom, I'm your host, Dan Kilpatrick, as usual.
How are you doing? Mate. I'm very well, thanks.
Good?
Yeah, feeling good.
Good. Joining us again this week, we have Adam Nathan. Adam, how are you doing, mate?
Very well, evening, boys.
Thank you very much for coming down. You may remember Adam from the Andre Villas-Boas feature pod that we did with Kev, or Bankrupt Spurs. No Bankrupt this week. Because I messaged Bankrupt today to say apologies for the late notice. He's not actually in London, so he's not able to come down.
Good. So the fact that you forgot to invite him doesn't matter.
I drunkenly organised this on Saturday night and thought that I'd put both Adam and Kev's names into the, but I didn't. And so drunken admin error.
It's all right.
That's how it is. Yeah. Unfortunately, sorry, lads. No, thanks. Thanks for coming back, Adam. You're, of course, part of the Spurs Trust as well.
Yes.
The Supporters Trust as well. Any gossip that you can give us in that regard?
Couldn't possibly divulge anything, but
we'll wait for the
you'll
minutes.
Be the first to know when that's ready
we'll
to go.
We'll tell Dan. He's the official ESPN correspondent.
Yeah,
so,
any ITK, yeah, send it my way.
And then secondary Tottenham Way podcast.
Yeah, so. they'll be chuffed for me for that.
Yeah.
That's great.
A credible source of
yeah, for sure.
You, of course, went to Crystal Palace on Saturday as well, didn't you?
I did.
And you did in your professional capacity, Dan.
I did.
But there's only one place to start, I think, this week. And we might as well start with you saying that you lost all professionalism in the box.
I did. In the
press box, Dele Alli's goal.
Yeah, I know it's a no swearing pod, but I stood up and went, fucking hell.
Yeah, I think it's a warranted swear.
It was a real moment. It was a real I was there moment.
Yeah, all right.
And then, sorry, I was there.
I was also there. Sorry, we were actually. Yeah.
I pretended to be there.
Well, the funny thing was, I was sitting next to all the Spurs press team. So, like the Spurs social media guy, the guy who kind of does the official updates, and then the head of press. And I was quite interested in a kind of professional and sort of. Just out of interest, really, to see how they would react to a Spurs goal or Spurs falling behind. And they were very professional. The press guy barely blinked when Crystal Palace took the lead, and they don't obviously show a lot of emotional jump around, but when Ali scored, I was kind of on my feet and I looked round and they were all on their feet, and the head of press was going, behave,
don't remember again. It was a moment, wasn't it? It's going to be played over and over and over again. And it's got to be our goal of the season. I mean, if it's bettered, then I can't wait to see what betters it. But the ball didn't touch the floor from when Kane crossed it from the right-hand side, did it? And then within three touches.
Did it bounce in front of Eriksen?
No, he headed it straight back to Ali. And then, but was it chest, knock
knee,
over the head, knee, knock
knee
over
flick,
the head,
goal.
And then volley, and it curled. It was incredible strike. The question that I was going to ask that I've put in front of you as well is that in terms of execution and technique, and obviously those are really important for the type of goal that Ali scored, but just the sheer audacity to try what he did. Have we actually seen a goal like that since? The example that I've got is Bale's volley against Stoke really early on in the season in 2010. And that felt like an arrival goal because obviously he'd only been around for about 6 months for us playing regularly and playing well. But that goal was before any of the Champions League stuff, you know, before the hat-trick, before ripping Mike on to shreds at home, before the AVB season, everything like that. That was the goal he scored, and that felt like his raw talent manifest in one moment. Do you get that impression with Ali's goal, or have you seen enough already to believe that that is just kind of tip of the iceberg? Or
I think the Bale goal, trying to remember, Lennon chipped the crossover, and it was sort of his only option was just to swing a left foot it, because he wasn't able to bring it down.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So he's sort of got a thought, well, what else am I going to do? I might as well swing a leg and see what happens, and it goes in, and you're thinking that's an amazing goal. With Ali, especially the way we're playing, quite patient, he's got 10, 15 other options that he could do. So to even think that that's what he was going to do, for me, almost gives me more to look forward to than the Bale goal, because Bale's was, I'll chance my arm, whereas this was measure. I know he tried to play it down, or I just took a touch and had a shot and it went in. But there's got to be something in a player's mind that makes him think, I'm going to try this and see if it comes off.
Yeah.
And so for me, it just, it's at the top of anything when it comes to audacity and technique, because of what it says about a guy's, the guy's 19.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
So a better comparison might be Kane against Chelsea.
Okay.
The fact that he started in a position where...
Yeah,
his first goal.
The first goal, when he kind of shrugged off, was it Fabregas and Ramirez?
Yeah, Oscar.
And, Oscar. And then
Zola, Dennis Wise.
Yeah.
Shrugged them all off.
Yeah.
And then whacked in the bottom corner. It wasn't nearly as good in terms of technique or...
aesthetically pleasing. Sure.
But the fact that, as Adam says, he decided from that position, I'm going to score here, is kind of similar to what Ali did.
Yeah, people, I think we've known as a fan base just how good Ali is, and it's been a surprise to us this season. I think however good or however much people may have seen him in League One when he was playing for MK Dons, people can guess and think he's going to be good, but I don't think anyone believed that he was going to be playing as consistently well as he is now. I think I expected him to play about 10-15 games this season, possibly even go on loan in January if he wasn't getting a certain amount of games. But this feels like the moment where everyone's starting to take notice.
Yeah, I think there's a massive lesson to be learned from what we did with him with the hopefully impending Moussa Dembele transfer from Fulham. Allowing him to stay at MK Dons, come to Spurs when everyone comes in at pre-season and you start from scratch with everyone, I think that has had such a better impact than if we brought him in last January into a squad that was sort of settled, and then say, all right, mate, go out and perform and do something for us. If we do that with Dembele, I know we're going a little bit off track here, I think, again, I would much rather he was allowed to stay, perform well at his club, have a good season there, and then come in the summer, because I think that really has been a massive, massive thing for his development.
That's a completely fair point.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it was, looking back, it was about this time last year, I think it was deadline day we signed Ali. It felt like quite a small deal at the time, quite an under the radar transfer. Oh, Spurs have got this young guy, gotten from MK Dons, he's one for the future, and now there's considerable calls for him to be starting for England at the Euros.
Yeah, no,
and
absolutely.
They're fully justified.
Yeah.
It's astonishing.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think we have to be careful with him at all? Is it time for sort of tempering a few expectations, considering what has happened with so many other England players? I think, do you know Rob Brown?
Yeah.
Rob Brown, he put a tweet out saying something like, well, at least England aren't known for bigging up their youngsters, something like that. And he showed four pictures. This was a tweet. He showed four pictures, and one of them was something like, it was a headline from articles, and it was like, why Raheem Sterling is the best youngster in the world? And it was going through like four examples of these players that have come out over the last year and been, you know, made an impact in some way. But I mean, Dele Alli's not quite getting to that stage, but
we've been saying since he broke through, or since he signed, that there's going to be a point where he has a bad spell. That's inevitable for your first season in the Premier League, even when you're not a 19-year-old. He's going to dip, and he did look quite tired in that game
over Christmas. I thought,
tired over Christmas. So it's probably going to happen. He's not showing signs of it yet, but there's no reason, just because he's scored some unbelievable goals doesn't mean what we've been saying since August isn't suddenly not true. And it's just about how we manage him and how Pochettino manages him, but I think the club's well aware of that, and thankfully, unlike last season when Mason was absolutely knackered after he made his England debut. Pochettino's got options that he trusts now.
Yeah, so well stocked come in, here,
and especially now Chadli's back in the team and firing. Lamela was on the bench. Bentaleb.
Sure.
It shouldn't be a problem if Ali needs a rest.
Yeah.
They all seem quite good at ignoring the outside noise of what's going on. I mean, if you look at the Kane situation from the start of the year when he hadn't scored for 6-7 weeks, everyone sort of took it in their stride, and it was he will score and he will come back to form, and he did. And I think with Ali, as long as he's playing well, and even if he starts having a bit of a dip, I actually don't think he's played that well for the last 6 weeks, but he's been chipping in with goals, which if you were going to have, you know, if you were going to make a deal and say you're not going to play that well, but you're going to score crucial goals, you'll take it.
And yeah, absolutely.
The mate I was with on Saturday made a good point. He said, I think he could be a Lampard-style player where he's not necessarily going to be man of the match because of running the game for 90 minutes, but he will chip in with important goals. Mm. And so I think as long as they are mature with the way in which they deal with the noise around him, either good or bad, I would just keep letting him be what
he's
wants
to be. He's
in
the perfect club, isn't he, at the moment?
To follow up on that point Adam made, I was thinking exactly the same on Saturday, that Ali's quickly become this player that Pochettino can't really bring off.
Yeah.
It's like you said the same about Kane a few weeks ago. Even when Kane is puffing and he's absolutely knackered and he can't press anymore, Poch isn't taking him off. He's dropping him deep and letting Son or Jai or Chadli or someone do the pressing. Because Kane is capable of scoring a goal from nothing. He just needs a header, he just needs to shift and shoot. And Ali is quickly becoming the same type of player.
Mm.
You don't take him off because he can produce a moment of magic.
I
out
think
of nothing.
I responded
Everton,
to somebody saying
Palace, even when he's knackered.
We'll move on to the subs now. We might as well talk about the game, you know, wider context. But somebody, just after Eric Dier was taken off for Chadli, somebody tweeted something like, "Oh, Ali's had a really," as you were saying, Edmund, he didn't look great in the game, and it perhaps was a sign, perhaps being a little bit leggy. It's a lot of games, and it's a big difference to League One football. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, I would have taken Ali off and for Bentaleb or something like that, and then forced Dembele further forward, something like that. But in the end, and I responded to him saying, Ali's going to get something out of nothing. Yeah. It wasn't a prediction, it was just he's more likely to do something out of nothing. And Palace offered very, very little, I thought, despite the goal. Well, you were 1-0 down without having faced a shot on target, which is, for lack of a better term, Spursy. But Dier was a spare man in that midfield, I thought, and I thought Pochettino got it notably correct.
Yeah.
For the first time, I think he's obviously got his subs right before, in various games, but this felt like a really notable sort of watershed moment, perhaps, because that is one of the biggest criticisms of Pochettino, that he makes the wrong subs and too late.
Yeah.
But this was quite early, I think
about
he'd made
minutes,
which is really early for Pochettino. Dier came off, Chadli came on. You're not a massive fan of Chadli, are you?
No.
But he's,
well, I like Chadders.
Well, he a goal and assist.
I think he's the kind of player that you see, he doesn't do anything apart from score in general or assist, and you know, I personally don't think that that's good enough for a player, because I think you might get a player who may score slightly less but impacts the game in other ways. You know,
so
I'm not a big Lamela fan either necessarily, but I would always have Lamela ahead of Chadli because of what he can bring to 90 minutes as opposed to a moment. But when Chadli is going to turn it on, you just need to ride that and just take it, because they all seem like a bonus to me when Chadli scores, if that makes sense.
Okay, Dan?
The thing is, I don't disagree, but I think I value goals and assists perhaps more than Adam does. I think it's what wins you games, and if you have someone like Chadli that does, it's not similar to what I was saying about Ali, but it's still, if you have someone on the pitch who can score a goal and will score a goal, you only need them to get one, and that could win you the game. So
I don't think
Chadli should be starting for Spurs, but a lot of people were saying few weeks ago, he's way down the pecking order, he's really going to struggle to get back in this team, and then in the last two matches you've just shown what he's all about. He doesn't do a great deal, but
he's earned the trust of Poch, hasn't he? Over last season was a good season for Chadli after a pretty indifferent first season for various reasons.
Sherwood played him defensive
midfield, that being one.
And he scored 14 goals last season, which is really impressive.
In a season, you know, where Kane got 30-odd and you do need people to be chipping in as well. He was our second highest scorer, wasn't he?
I think Eriksen...
Eriksen probably.
Yeah, he's the second highest scorer in the league with 11.
But we hit three players to hit over 10 goals in the league.
Yeah.
And we were the only team to do that in the top... Maybe top half our market.
I think in the division.
And he was part of that. I think he's certainly got a place in the squad, as we've seen in, you know, we had a replay against Leicester, which actually I haven't put into the running order, but we can sort of mix it in with the Palace result. I didn't think of that.
and Chadley played up front in that. I spoke to Chadley after the Palace game.
Okay.
Humble brag.
Yeah. I was not going to get stick for that.
There's no comfortable way to say that, is there?
I mean, well, me and about four others.
Yeah.
And he was asked about playing up front, and he obviously towed the party line and said it's something he's very happy to do. But he seemed quite relaxed about it. And now that Son's coming back into the first 11 predicament... reckoning rather for the midfield, I would imagine that Chadley might get a few more games up front.
Yeah, there's a lot more games coming
on Saturday.
You know, yeah, we've got Colchester and we've got Fiorentina coming up in February 18th,
I think it is.
4 weeks away, yeah, 3 weeks away.
I thought it was a really important change because it was the first time he's broken from his tradition from a formation and a sort of style wise. I mean, Deer has played basically every minute of every game. Well, certainly I think he's started every game this season apart from Leicester in defensive midfield. I mean,
he was suspended for one
Liverpool. But even against Monaco, which was effectively a dead rubber, he still played in defensive midfield. So I think it probably took quite a lot of courage for Pochettino to take him off. Because it did open us up a little bit. And you know, that's the chance you take.
They didn't seem to be doing anything.
No, but they had a couple of counter-attacks afterwards, which is naturally to take defensive midfielder off. So I think to have the courage to say, I'm going to risk it, take him off, it might open us up a bit, but, you know, putting an extra attacking body on there. I'm normally a fan of keeping a holding midfielder on because I think you can recycle the ball quicker, which actually can make you more attacking. But actually, it worked really well, and I would like to think that he might use that as an option in the future.
It was an aggressive substitution.
Yeah. I think Dyer
really
was tired as well, which is worth
He was really poor, which didn't help.
But I think there was an easy sub to make there with Dyer. If Dyer was tired, you bring on Bentaleb as a straight swap. But this was, like you were saying, a complete change of formation. It basically allowed for Ali, having his poor game, let's try him. Because he was playing in from the left a lot in the first half, Ali, and kind of,
it was kind of a 4-3-3 in the first half. Eriksen was very deep, playing with Dyer and Dembele. And Ali and Son were kind of pushing either side of Kane. Son to the right, Ali to the left.
And it was almost 4-4-2, for want of a better expression, in the second half, because you had two targets up top. Ali and Dembele were very much your central midfielders. And then Eriksen and Son, it wasn't as rigid as, you know, like a Redknapp 4-4-2, but it sort of was with having two guys up front, which I think was the point, and it worked really well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we were saying just before the podcast that you never really felt like we weren't going to win that game.
No.
And I did have the same thing, and we both said that before Newcastle, from minute one, we both had that feeling, we're not going to win this.
Yeah.
Against Leicester, we both had feeling from minute one, this, you know, that you just get that feeling.
It doesn't feel right,
and it doesn't, everything, you know, just there's a chemistry in the air that makes you think this isn't going to go right. And even at 1-0 down against Palace, and I said so many times that I think I said it on last week's podcast, Pardew, when the chips are down for Pardew, he needs to play Tottenham because he seems to just beat us when his Newcastle and when Palace, obviously it was his first game, but they were in the mire when they brought him in, wins all over the shop. Yeah. Always just Dr. Tottenham's in the house. But I never really got the impression that we weren't going to come out of that with at least a point. And I think Kane's goal was a really important moment, of course, because it's equalising. But we were back in it. We had 20 minutes to go and find a winner.
Mm-hmm. Palace were very unlucky.
Do you think?
To hit the bar twice.
I thought that was all they really... No, I suppose because Loris...
They had a couple of shots. Loris made a few good saves. He saved from Zaha and from Suarez. And Alderweireld made a great block right after one of those saves. And then they hit the bar twice. There was a period where we rode it out. I mean, don't get me wrong, we fully deserved to win. But there was a period where I thought Palace got a bit unlucky not to score.
Yeah.
And as Adam says, part of that was probably down to not having done on the pitch. We went for it and it paid off.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was really pleasing. One big negative was the injury to Vertonghen. I didn't realise that it was as part of Wickham elbowing him in the face, but it was on his fall, wasn't it? And he's opened up his knee. There's a
and
picture.
His ankle.
Oh, and his ankle.
Apparently.
Right, okay. Because there's a picture from today. The squad seemed to be out in
Barcelona.
Barcelona training at Espanyol, is that right? And Vertonghen's on crutches. But we said it. You can't really read that much into it. A lot of players leave. They always say in reports, don't they? He left the ground on crutches, and then a week later, it's just a support. So we don't know, do we? Dan, I don't know if Dan, you've heard anything.
I tried to find out today, but there's nothing from the club. Okay. Chadley, Vertonghen was supposed to have a scan on. Pochettino said he was going to have a scan on Sunday, but he hasn't had one yet.
Okay. We're not the best as a club for divulging information quickly.
No.
So
this is true.
Apparently the medical, all I know is the medical staff, he's in Barcelona and the medical staff are there with him.
But I think you said, Adam, you wouldn't have flown if it was a serious
it's a fairly good time to get injured because we've got Colchester coming up, which he might not have played anyway. Vimmer normally comes in at left centre half. Then it's Norwich on Tuesday,
and then Watford.
And you'd think worst case scenario, if we can get him back for Man City.
City away, yeah, definitely.
It wouldn't be the end of the world.
Just on that, do you think Vimmer's going to, beyond Colchester for Norwich and Watford, do you think that Vimmer's going to be the first choice to come in there, or are you looking maybe at Dyer dropping back and Benton coming
in? No, I would have thought it'd be Vimmer.
I don't think
there is any chance that Dyer will play left centre half, especially because Ben Davies plays there for Wales anyway.
So I'd be pretty, and
he loves Dyer at centre midfield. There's been plenty of opportunities where he could have rested one of the centre halves, but apart from Leicester was the first time he's played centre half all season.
I'm quite impressed with Vimmer as well.
He was good at Leicester.
I think every game he's played so far, he's looked like
unfussed and composed.
Very
Vertonghen.
Very, very similar to Vertonghen.
I was at the Leicester game and we were defending away from where the fans were sat in the second half. If that makes sense, they're shooting towards us.
Yeah.
And the best thing I can say about him was that I forgot he was even playing.
Yeah.
Which is quite a nice thing for a centre half.
It was a brand new centre back partnership, wasn't it?
Yeah, he looked very unfussed, just get on with his job, distribute it well. And yeah, I thought he did quite well when he came on Saturday, because they didn't really have an awful lot after he came on.
No, I agree.
Yeah,
I think a lot of that is down to just the team as a whole, but it's a good unit to come in for a brand new player to come in, because it's not an easy position to play without a lot of minutes, but it does show the importance of rotation. Vimmer's played against Leicester twice in the space of, in the last month, basically, or in the last 3 weeks, actually, and he's arguably match fit now.
Yeah.
So we are using the squad well, or certainly a lot better than we were last season.
I think Pochettino must trust Vimmer as well. With hindsight, we were all saying, oh, we've got Dyer as backup centre-half, but with hindsight, Pochettino was probably planning that for a while. He was playing Dyer in midfield pre-season, and if he hadn't liked what he saw from Vimmer, Spurs would probably have another centre-half now, but he's he's not got on the bench very often, because I think Dyer is in the team.
Yeah.
If one of the you said that, didn't you?
Yeah,
someone
it's
said
a spare
that.
Sub,
and
isn't
if
it?
Dyer,
yeah.
If one of the centre-backs does get injured, we don't necessarily need the centre-half on the bench, because Dyer could slot
it's interesting when you say this is just hypothetical, but when you were saying that how much he likes Dyer at central defensive midfield, that so much so that he wouldn't drop him back into centre back. If, and I'm going to touch wood here, but if it was Alderweireld that got injured,
I was just about to say,
do you think Dyer would have fallen back, or would it have been Vertonghen and Vimmer?
I reckon he would. And I was just about to say, if Pochettino could choose which centre half to get injured based on nothing, I'm pretty sure he would say, I'd much rather do that because I can make a like for like change.
Yeah.
Or you're saying I'm bringing in Fazio or moving Dyer, both of which are not things that he'd want to do, I would assume.
One certainly a lot less than the other. Could you imagine if... Well,
we were looking at our team from last year on the train on the way back from Palace, just thinking how much has changed. And Fazio, Stambouli started that game. I mean, the turnaround in a year is not that short of remarkable. I mean, we lost to Stoke 3-0 in that game when Chiriches had a nightmare. That was only about 8 months ago.
Yeah, it was then towards the end of the season, wasn't it?
I mean,
it's
amazing the turnaround in about 8 months.
Yeah. Okay.
And very hard to predict as well, because most of us thought that Bentaleb and Mason would probably carry on as that midfield pairing when the window shut. And then Dembele's come from nowhere, Ali's come from nowhere. Even Carroll seems to have jumped ahead of
them. Yes, just Dembele has really worked himself back into the team to become one of the most important members. So again, you almost don't notice him being as excellent as he was, because he was good again against Palace. We might as well talk about the other areas of the squad as well. Rose and Trippier were rotated back into the squad as well. Do we have any idea who our first choice is, or do we not just simply not have a first choice right and left back? Because at the moment it seems to be that he's playing them depending on opposition, and certainly depending on how many minutes they've been playing recently. But that's four games in a row, and I know that it's been cup league, but four games in a row that the same two haven't played game after game.
Pochettino always rotates the fullbacks when it's three games in a week, doesn't he?
He does it in Europe.
Eriksen, Dyer, the centre halves will play three games in a week. Kane occasionally, but he'll always change the fullbacks, which says a lot about the way he wants them to play, which is to get forward a lot and be the width in that team and let the wingers sort of narrow the pitch and cut inside. So
I reckon if we were playing Arsenal tomorrow, it'd be Walker and Davis.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
I think fit and on form, Rose is first choice.
Yeah.
I've been quite disappointed with Rose recently, and especially on Saturday.
I've actually got a theory on Rose's poor performances.
Go on.
I think he plays so much better when Chadley's on the pitch. When Chadley came on against Palace, suddenly Rose looked full of confidence and he was like bombing forward.
And he's maybe applying this science.
That's exactly what I'm doing. I think, as we said, Ali didn't have the best game and he wasn't helping Rose out that much. And I don't think I saw Chadley track back particularly, but they seem to have had quite a good kind of link up and understanding with each other. And I just wonder whether that's not been the whole reason, but a factor in the fact that Rose hasn't hit the heights of last season.
He's maybe not quite as first choice as he was last season. Ben Davies seems to be so much far. And he needs that consistency of game time.
I think Adam's right. If there was a cup final tomorrow, it would probably be Davis and Walker. But I think Rose, fit and at his best, is just a better.
They've both played in big games this season. Davis played in the 4-1 against City. Rose played against Arsenal away, saying both gave big performances then. There's certainly more of a gap between Trippier and Walker, but I thought Trippier was.
I think that gap's closing.
Yeah, I think Trippier was quite impressive. He does get caught out at the back a lot, but he's a wing back, isn't he? Essentially, but I don't think we've had a crosser of the ball like him for a while.
No, I mean, there's absolutely.
Other than Dyer,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yes, but
he's. I think he's brilliant. I think he's put more better crosses in from his five games that he's played this season than Walker has in his entire Spurs career. I don't think Walker can cross a football. I like Walker. I've got a lot of time for him, and I understand what he brings to the team. But it takes him 2 seconds longer to put the ball in, whereas Trippier, it just seems to be second nature to him.
I think sneakily, there's a real shift in Walker's focus from attack to defence. I think he's actually a very solid right back defensively now, and that's to the detriment of his attacking. I'm not sure if that's what they've been working on, but he doesn't really chip in with assists. You know, you'd expect a right back, I mean, Steve Carr just popped into my head. You know, he used to be fizzing balls across the box nice and early, but Walker doesn't really do that. But there's definitely times when, this is a bit outlandish, but you could put Chadley on with Kane and play all four fullbacks with Trippier and one of the left back as a sort of more advanced, just to get the ball in the box, just to change things a little bit. Because I think all of them have got decent enough attributes that I think Trippier could certainly do a job for half an hour as a right midfielder if you needed him. Just to change it, just to try and get the pitch a little bit wider.
Very Sherwood.
It's a bit.
I didn't bring my gilet tonight. But the next time.
It's a bit Garth Crooks.
A little bit. Sometimes we do need to mix things up a little bit, and you can't forever invert your wingers. And
no, I think that's a solid point. I think it's an interesting battle there now, and that's probably the most hotly contested in our team at the moment, positions, definitely.
It's what Pochettino wanted from the start, I think, with two options on both sides that you can rotate depending on the opposition.
Who was Rose's? Oh, it was still Davis, wasn't it?
Yeah, this well, was Norton
Walker
before
didn't
that.
Have a
it was Norton
up, did
on
he?
Both sides
yeah.
before that.
Yeah.
It's quite noticeable that this is a kind of really simplification of the situation, but I guess in terms of athleticism, Walker and Rose are better.
Yeah.
They can bring the ball forward and they're a bit more direct. But you could argue that in terms of delivery into the box, Davis and Trippier have the edge. So it's two different types of fullback on each side.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, actually, I think that's the first one of the first podcasts that we did, and we talked about Davis and Trippier. In fact, I've got a feeling it was the very first one that we talked about, because Trippier's debut was in the German Cup or whatever, the Audi Cup.
Yeah.
And you were saying how you think Davis and Trippier are much better defensively, and when we maybe go away to the big teams, we'll play them.
I'm not sure that's true. I'm not sure that's true anymore.
No,
I agree. I think Walker's a better defender defensively. I think what Davis brings is he's solid defensively, and when he puts a cross in, he's less of a... Rose tends to fizz into an area,
yeah.
like one of you just said. Whereas I think Davis tends to get his head up and try and pick out a man. And that was very evident against Leicester when he found Lamella twice. Was that the first leg against Leicester? It was the first leg against Leicester, the draw.
Yeah.
He found Lamella twice and he shot over twice and he found Kane at the near post and Kane headed wide. And I think that's he brings that and Trippier brings that as well, kind of. Just good delivery, really.
Yeah.
I think what is nice, and everyone seems to, you get the 10-minute countdown before team news where all the comedians come out and say, oh, can't wait for the meltdown. They're actually, it's very rare that people are angry at the team selection anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally wouldn't be happy with any team with Vorm or Chadli in it. But apart from that, there's no other player in the squad that I would be disappointed. Let's assume he's completely exiled.
Yeah.
There's no player in the realistic match day 18 that I'd be disappointed
to
play again.
Last season there were at least five.
Yeah.
Adebayor, Soldado,
we are worse.
Capoue, Cabal. Yeah, actually that's easily 10, I'd say.
Yeah.
Actually,
we are definitely worse because he's playing.
Mm.
Whereas now it's quite nice. You feel they can rotate in and out really well, and they don't look like anyone needs three games to sort of get to the pace of it. They all look very much ready to play whenever they do.
Yeah.
Well, last season Pochettino used 14, about 13 or 14 outfield players every single week for about 8 months.
Yeah.
And this season he's been speaking about how it's a squad game and he's got 24 players and they join the club to train, not to play, all this kind of stuff. Mm. And it seems like he genuinely believes it. He genuinely believes in the squad, with the exception of Townsend, Fazio and Vorm, who just aren't going to start.
Yeah,
but
I think they know where they are.
The rest of them are banging contention to start.
And that's good. That must be an incentive as well, because obviously Kane has got no backup, but Kane is still playing on that kind of 21, 22-year-old, I'm suddenly one of the best strikers in Europe form. Mm-hmm. You know, your performances aren't likely to drop if you're Harry Kane, because he's already shown that he's prepared to come from nothing to be what he is now.
And he's never going to be profligate in front of goal.
No.
So as long as you create for him, the chances are he will score enough. So even if he's not working the channels quite as well or winning as many flick-ons, get the ball into an area where he can score, he almost
certainly will. Of a poacher as he is a target man or the man that runs the channels.
Yeah.
So, you know, that goal that he scored, that was desire to get that header. I can't remember, was it Delaney or Dan that he was up against?
Delaney, I think.
You know, he's a bit of a lump, and that is his game. Mm-hmm. Ball's going into the box and him heading it away. That desire to get up there, he had to put all the power on it because it was stood up for him. He's just great, isn't he? It's just standard.
I love the man.
So standard now. All right, let's move on to the Colchester game on Saturday. Early kickoff, ripe for a giant killing. Or are you feeling fairly comfortable with this? I did a little bit of research for this, Dan, because I thought they're so unknown to us that I have to do something. At least with other Premier League teams, we kind of know about them because we watch Match of the Day.
Yeah.
Or you see them on Sky every other week. Colchester are currently 22nd in League One. They are about 8 points from safety. They lost
from safety.
Yeah, they're in big trouble.
Yeah.
They lost 3-0 to Scunthorpe on Saturday. They haven't got a midweek game, so we are the very next game for them. But that could all be a casserole of horror for us on Saturday, because this could essentially be their season. They may not be expecting to get much out of it, but yeah, they're going to put quite a lot into this. They're live on TV, they're at home, we're probably going to be rotating quite heavily, we're doing really well in the league at the moment. There's a feel-good factor about us that they are going to want to break, isn't there? And I don't know anything about their players, they could have anyone up front for all I know. But, you know, it's worth asking the question, isn't it? Is it anything to fear, or do you feel like there's enough from us? Do you feel like the mentality from us would be correct?
I'm not worried. I haven't been until now. Until your little speech.
Should I give you reasons? Yeah.
The casserole has really done me. Yeah. I'm terrified now.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, I was feeling fine about it.
That's what I do. I bring doom.
Spurs really should have enough. I don't know anything about Colchester, but to follow on from what we've just been saying, even with a lot of changes, there's still going to be a lot of players in really good form and a lot of really good players.
If Leicester away was our second string, let's just say that's our second string, that was a really impressive performance, I thought.
I'd expect Chadley to start, I'd expect Lamella to start.
Onuma?
Onuma probably, Bentaleb certainly.
Did you see anything with Harry Winks and Cameron Carter-Vickers? Because they have been around the first team a little bit more recently, haven't they?
They were apparently in the squad for the Leicester game, as in they travelled to Leicester.
Do you think one of them might make the bench, come on for 20 minutes if you're 3-0 up or something?
Maybe Carter-Vickers if Vertonghen's ruled out.
Yeah.
The reason I'm not worried is because, and this is obviously ripe for replaying when we get out 1-0 or something, is that, and this has been a mark of all the games, for the first 20 minutes of any game, we don't really tend to do anything. It's very much patience, let's see what they're going to do, keep it knocking side to side, and then you can see there's a real switch that gets flicked after about 20, 25 minutes of, right, now we're going to play a 70-minute match against you and try and beat you. And it's nice to have that confidence in a manager that you know they're going to, I mean, unless the pitch is an absolute potato farm and it's going to be impossible to keep the ball on the deck and you're going to have to resort to long balls, I'm confident in the knowledge that we'll dominate the game for 20 minutes, because I don't think the team will be any weaker than Leicester away, because we've got these players, why would you need to make it any weaker than that? And so I just sort of feel that we'll outthink them, hopefully, because we'll see where they're weak and then we'll exploit that probably in the second half. And if they do want to come out and make a real fist of it in the first half, you know, from the off, which I guess is quite a lower league mentality of let's get up them, we should have the quality to take them on, especially they'll likely be very low in confidence.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a new stadium, I think, that Colchester have got, so I don't know if that makes any difference with regards to how they keep the pitch, but that's my preview as well. Part of the preview. I drive past their stadium sometimes when I'm. Yeah, my mate lives in Ipswich.
Are you going to the game?
I'm not. No. Are you? Are you going?
I'm going.
Yeah. Oh, you are.
Me too. I could do a lift. You drive.
I am driving actually.
All right, sorted. we've got to get there an hour before though.
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay.
We've sorted out a carpool on top of my podcast. Oh, I wish I'd got a ticket now.
Probably should have said that for the break. Really.
Never mind.
Not break this thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're expecting a comfortable victory, surely.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have that confidence in Spurs.
Yeah. That's quite nicely leads us on to the first question that we've got. It's actually from Bankrupt, who obviously at Bankrupt Spurs, here in spirit, of course. He particularly asked this to be put to you, and I'm not sure why, but you may be able to shed some light on it, Adam. Is Pochettino now the best Spurs manager in your lifetimes? If not, in what aspects of the job have others been better, and where does he personally need to improve?
Goodness.
Hell of a question. I think he is. I said this. I don't want to be all sort of eye spotted this early. You know, this isn't what I'm trying to say here. But about a year ago, I did put out this. He's my favourite ever Spurs manager, and then I did this big long self indulgent thread about why. And it is the whole thing of how he's a coach and not. And he seems like a coach and a good man as well. I think, did you see the interview he did after the Palace game? and they asked him about Dele Alli's goal.
He says a bit lucky.
Yeah, he just went lucky, no? Yeah. And it's, and just, it doesn't need to be much, but it's just a nice little moment of behind the fitness coaching, you know, and behind the sort of regimented thing, that attitude that he's got.
I think this is probably aimed at me because I'm quite a big Harry Redknapp fan.
I think, and yeah, still, with the AVB thing that we're talking about, I think he's the biggest parallel we can draw, isn't it? AVB with Pochettino.
Well,
in terms
Pochettino's
of
a good manager, which would make that well, a
it,
parallel.
That's what I mean. Like he's in the same mould, isn't he?
I don't know how you can equate best, because there'll be some people screaming that Ramos is the best manager recently because we won a cup, which for me is a little bit trite. But he's certainly my favourite manager, partly because you don't necessarily see anywhere that we're papering over the cracks. I think we started off from a very low base when he came, and there are building blocks that are escalating really quickly. I mean, I thought this would be a transitional season. Mm. Certainly after leaving the games against Stoke and Everton at the start of the year, I was pretty content in my mind that, okay, it's not going to be that great this year. I mean, I think that there's quite a few blogs out there from the start of the year that Spurs fans have got to be patient. Mm. This isn't going to be the one. And partly because we're doing well and partly because other teams have just been awful, it's transpired that we're in a great position. So I think in terms of what he's building, he's definitely my favourite. I don't necessarily know enough about the ins and outs of what he does to say where he can improve. Maybe, no, some might say he makes changes a little bit too late in games, and I wouldn't disagree with that, but I wouldn't use it as a stick to beat him with. But I don't know, I just think...
Would you... Which team do you... it's probably wrong to say which team do you enjoy watching more, because I still would have enjoyed Redknapp's peak season. Mm-hmm. But I love this team more. I feel more connection with this team, and I want this team to do... Mm-hmm. I always want, obviously, of course, I want Tottenham to do well, but I feel like I'd really love for this group of players specifically to get something, to gain some success with Tottenham. Someone asked on Twitter if you thought that Redknapp's team and this team came up against each other, who do you think would win?
This team.
I think this team as well, because I think you'd only need that little
mental... I think it's mentally stronger than Redknapp's team.
Absolutely. Yeah, but then you put Kane a good Kabul up, and then Van der Vaart and Bale and Modric and a good Adebayor. I mean, it was a nice question to answer. I think this is probably a nicer team to support, and it's probably easier to be a Spurs fan in the social media days, because in general everyone's pretty much on board with it, and barring a few squabbles that people have, I think there were Redknapp haters who were entrenched from day one until the end.
Yeah.
And so there will always be people that are saying, oh, I hate him, and this is why he's not good, and this is where we're failing. Whereas now, apart from the people that would try and be contrary about Pochettino, everyone's just ticking along and just enjoying the ride, which is quite nice.
Yeah, and I think that's part of why, he's my favourite manager of my lifetime. Sometimes there's a kind of intangible that you can't really put your finger on, which is what an intangible is, isn't it? Sometimes there's for instance, it's not all about results. I mean, for instance, at Man United, that they might win a few games, but you feel like there's something rotten going on under the surface.
There's
no feel-good factor. And even when Sherwood was winning Tottenham football matches, there was a kind of disconnect. And with Pochettino, it feels like not only has he got Spurs winning games, playing great football, but he seems to have united the whole club, and everyone is pushing in this same direction. Everyone's fully on board with his project, with his philosophy, and you can just feel that.
Mm. I think you've got a point there, Adam, as well, when you say that he came in and we were at a base, because we were at a really low ebb.
That was the lowest ebb it's been.
Yeah, I think the amount that I cared about Tottenham has never dropped as low as it did as the last days of Sherwood. I remember saying that we had Arsenal at home, we lost 1-0, they scored within 50 seconds or something. I didn't care.
I follow some United fans on Twitter, and one thing they were saying after the Southampton defeat was when Austin scored, they just felt nothing.
Yeah.
And I remembered in the final days of Sherwood, when we were conceding goals, it was kind of just a shrug, like, yeah, oh, we've conceded.
There were so many people that misinterpreted that as well, that to say that you want us to lose games because you don't like
XYZ. You just become disaffected by it.
You do, absolutely. And I think for him to have come in at that base, because when Redknapp came in, and I think that's probably the, other than AVB in terms of style, but in terms of, let's say, relative success, mm-hmm, Redknapp's another paradigm that we can sort of play off with Pochettino. I just think Redknapp came in when we were in the mire. We were 2.8 games, of course, but there was a team set up there. Whereas Pochettino walks into this team and must have immediately identified, like we were saying, 10 players, mm-hmm, that he probably hated from day one and just thought, I don't want you anywhere near, but you have to be here because I can't sell 10 of you because I'm not going to get 10 in. And he's built up from that. And for someone to have done that at a club like Tottenham that don't give managers time and don't have a lot of patience, and that goes from fans to the board, he deserves so much credit and respect. And there is a reason why all these articles come out about Pochettino and saying how he's the most impressive manager in England, that Neville said it, didn't he, and how he's doing so much for the national team and stuff. It just seems to be a natural thing for him to do. It doesn't seem like he's come in with the purpose of getting these young players specifically. It's just he's naturally that way inclined to get the best out of players that have got the highest ceiling. And sorry, Rich Arrowsmith, I know you hate the term, but highest ceiling and the most amount of desire to do well. So
everyone's just
so impressive.
Everyone's just on board. And I think the moment that crystallised that for me was when Bentaleb sort of had his mini bit of exiling from the squad early. I mean, I have been as big a Bentaleb fan as possible, partly because I loathed the term that he was Sherwood's pet, because actually I thought he was playing well.
Yeah.
And then that went into next season. He was dominating games against Chelsea, Arsenal, or whatever. And then against Monaco, I was watching him thinking, I'm really not enjoying what you're doing. It's a lot of flicks. It's very fancy. Mm. And it just didn't sit right. And then when he was out the team, I found myself fully agreeing with Pochettino. And in the past, I would never have agreed with a manager ahead of a player who I really loved. And I think he's just got everyone on board. And this is my philosophy, like it or lump it.
Yeah.
And there will be player casualties that people don't like because of that. I'm sure there'll be some staunch Townsend fans out there still.
Mm.
But it's my way or the highway. And that generally is the best way to run a football club.
Yeah, Fergie did it for years. Not going to make any comparisons because it's ridiculous. We have to win something with Pochettino, I feel, like, to really kick on. But, you know, he made masters out of some of his best players.
Yeah.
Beckham was, you know, out on his ass for, well, about 18 months before he'd actually gone. He made examples of Giggs on his first day there, things like that, that you can see direct comparisons.
Yeah. Well, he sold Stam, didn't he, which was the big one, yeah, when he was in his absolute prime.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He fell out with Van Nistelrooy as well, yeah, I think, didn't he? So yeah, it's as impressive as a manager as I can remember, and he does genuinely improve players. He's probably managed to, if we sold every member of the squad tomorrow, they would all go for, I don't know, 200 million more than the whole squad would have gone for a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Anything else to add on that one?
No. Cool. I think you covered it nicely.
Spurs for life at LouJane1882. Given the comments by Pardew after the match, do we have the nicest manager in the Premier League? And in brackets, she's put with the best squad.
What were the comments from Pardew?
I think Pardew said something like, he was basically saying how impressive we were, but there was a couple of things he said we needed to work on when we don't have the ball, because he had to get a dig in there. but he's talking about how impressive we are and how we are one of the best squads in the league and things like that.
Okay, how is that about Pochettino being nice?
Because Pardew isn't.
Yeah,
I see. Probably. Compared to Pardew, he's a saint.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't really slagged off Pardew very much, but
no, we've been very grown up.
Yeah.
Let's do it now.
he is by far and away the smuggest manager in the Premier League, and there's nothing I enjoy more than seeing him lose.
Yeah.
Which made Saturday extra special.
Yeah, it was, and especially away at Palace as well, who are Facebook football club.
Yeah, I mean, having said that, I kind of quite like it. We were talking about it earlier. I almost like him in a strange way. He's entertaining. Yeah, he's ridiculous. He's absurd. He's a wind up, and he knows it.
Yeah.
He's very smug.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I detest Allardyce, Hughes, Martinez, but I actually don't dislike. I would never be that disappointed if Pardew was on goals on Sunday, for example, because I would be moderately interested in listening to him. And actually, that links to what I was about to say about Pochettino. The one thing I would really like from him is just for if they had an hour interview and they got the translator back and he was able to fully explain his thoughts on football. I fully appreciate that Spurs didn't want him to have the translator, and that does make sense. But
he's more or less got one. Jesus Perez is more or less his translator.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Pretty much.
Right.
But in the press conferences, it's still very much, you know, you could play Pochettino bingo with most press conferences.
Yeah.
It would be quite nice to hear an in-depth thing with what, you know, his philosophies, where he can actually explain himself more.
Independent of Tottenham.
Absolutely. Just, Des Kelly did a series on BT of, you know, getting to know the manager over the summer, and it was really good. But it was, with Pochettino, it was half an hour, but still, you felt that he was really contained within his language barrier.
Yeah.
And if he been able to, you know, speak with subtitles freely, I think it would just be quite interesting to hear what he thinks about a lot of things.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think he does come across well in everything he does because he doesn't give anyone any reason to not like him.
No.
Equally, he doesn't seem to do anything. Like I say, he does crack every so often, and he seems like quite a warm, funny man. And so many of the players have already come out and said how much, like Rose is, he absolutely loves him, doesn't he? But he absolutely loves Rose, and it's a little bit Redknapp, and you put that arm around players and you can get a lot more out of them. It's unquantifiable aspects of a footballer. It's confidence and things like that that you can build by being a person and a human being rather than a coach.
Yeah, I remember I said this last week. It's another humble brag. But at press conferences, you can very much see two sides of Pochettino. The first 15 minutes of the press conference is for the Sky Sports News cameras, and he's very careful what he says, and he doesn't use Perez for any kind of translations. He just, as Adam says, he just comes out with these stock phrases. It's going to be a very tough match, it's very important, this is our philosophy, this is our project. And then the cameras go off and the kind of print journalists gather around him, and he's much more relaxed. He will ask Perez for clarifications all the time on what he's saying.
Do you think?
And he cracks jokes and tells stories, and he'll always throw in an anecdote. It's normally about when he was at Espanyol the other week.
Yeah.
He said one about when he had to mark Romario and Ronaldo. I think that was actually for Argentina.
Yeah.
And that made it into a lot of the papers the next day. But you can see this very warm, kind of friendly, outgoing side. And I imagine that's what he's like with the players who were in his inner circle.
Yeah.
And he likes. And then there's this very kind of cold, formulaic sort of plan side, and I can almost imagine Townsend going up to him and saying, "Boss, like, what's the situation?" And him just saying, "Oh, you're in the squad, we've got a tough game."
Yeah.
And then that's it. Yeah. Once
he was a player quite recently, wasn't he? He was, I think, 2004 he was still playing. Mm. He went to 2002 World Cup.
Gave away the penalty.
He kicked the hell out of Ashley Cole as well. There's a great picture circulating. Someone Ashley Cole is in full flight, like above Pochettino's head, and with that massive mane of hair that he had. But it's maybe it comes with that. Maybe this is the first of a new wave of managers that did play when the media did begin to be almost 50-60% of what a footballer was. He may not have been a Beckham and a superstar, but he knows what a modern footballer maybe has to go through. So he's not stupid, he's not naive in that respect.
Yeah,
so
it's very deliberate. It's very deliberate. Tottenham, I think, on the whole, I don't know if you'll agree with this, Adam, but on the whole, they seem like quite a paranoid club who don't want to give much away, and I think that probably comes from the very top, from Levy. And Pochettino reflects that. He's deliberately doesn't say very much.
Well, there's almost no benefit to saying it. I mean, far from me to feel sorry for Wenger, but yesterday I think he said Costa has gotten Mertesacker sent off and he got Gabriel sent off in the last game. And I think he was just trying to say that he was involved in the incident and his English let him down ever so slightly. And all of a sudden on TalkSport they're saying, is Wenger right to say that Costa got him sent off, wasn't it? And he just felt, if he just said disappointing to lose the game, then there's no... And Pochettino has it right, because there's never any controversy over what he says.
Yeah.
And it just eradicates that whole area of stress around a football club when your manager's not going to give you anything to for the Sunday supplement.
He makes no narratives.
The only thing to talk about is the football, and it's just so much easier that way.
Yeah, and luckily at the moment the football is great, so the wins are coming and stuff. But you know, Dan, you said it. I think Ben Pearce has said it to you before about how it is a nightmare because you've got nothing to work with as a journalist, as a print journalist. There isn't that much to work with.
Yeah, I'm starting to understand it.
But as a fan, you must enjoy it. But as a reporter, it must drive you crazy.
Well, you're in the press conference, and when the cameras are rolling, and you're waiting for him to say something that is like a line, like a news line. And there's always something. Like last week, he said that maybe Harrison and Sterling, you know, the teenage guys, could be backups for Kane, and the sort of whole room will just sort of sit up and think, right, there's our lead.
Yeah.
That's a potentially good story that he'd rather promote someone than buy someone. But a lot of the times, particularly when you're asking about the opposition, it's just always tough opponent, very good players, great respect.
Yeah.
Every week.
It's great. I really love it.
There's absolutely nothing.
I've got no reason to feel like I need to tune in to a Pochettino press conference or anything like that. Whereas before, with Harry,
anything could happen.
I used to think, and it was funny, but I think of it now and I just think, oh, for God's sake, like.
Hello? had to happen
bankrupt a little bit late before.
Bankrupt scrambling in drunk. Never mind, just that's an extra visitor.
To follow up on that, it's part of the reason why Sherwood was maybe liked by the press, because he was so entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was fun. It was a chat about football with a guy who was going to tell it how it was and wasn't going to look after the club or look after his bosses. He was going to say, I haven't heard from them. And that's something that
and as soon as people knew that he wasn't going to be manager afterwards, he had 3 months of free-for-all.
There was a point where
second visitor.
Hello, sorry.
It's going to keep happening.
That's a shame. We might as well. We're going to plough through.
There's a sign on the door.
There is a sign on the door, but you know,
not sure that guy could read. Not as complimentary as he may have been.
No, and never mind. Let's do the last question. We've got about 5 minutes left. We have had a couple about we faced the least shots on target this season. Sorry, this is from Harish Barani at Harish_Barani. We have faced the least shots on target this season. Who deserves more credit for this, the centre backs or Dier?
Team effort.
Yeah, I thought that. And my immediate response to that was team effort.
I think everything now is a team. My dad was saying after we lost to Newcastle, we were trying to pick out who played well in that game, and he said, and very completely enlightening to me, that if you actually think about this, most Spurs games now, it's very rare that one player performs that differently to the rest of the team.
Yeah.
In general, if we don't play well, there are very few standouts. Yeah. And when we win and play really well, there's no one really that falls behind. It feels like such a unit moving up and down the team together that even when we're saying you plug an extra player in and he plays well, and he just, that it's just such a team now that even looking at our running, I'm not that worried about who we're playing, because I'm fairly confident that if we put it together, we'll give us the best chance to win.
Yeah, I trust this team more than any other team.
Yeah.
And individuals in that. Like Kane in a Redknapp team would be a superstar. He'd be the man that everyone would be talking about in the same respect as Bale. But it's almost unsung hero because everyone else is on that same limit. Let's do the last question, and it's back to Pochettino. Gavin Lewis at Spursy_Gav. What is your favourite Pochettino touchline look? Personally, a big fan of the coat and scarf with the Spurs pin. I put a tweet out.
I quite like him in the tracksuit.
He's
got some quite cool trainers.
You know those old retweet for fave for bits? Yeah. I did one for the tracksuit poch or touchline.
I remember.
Suit
that was
poch.
A while ago, wasn't it? A
few months ago.
Yeah.
And I think suit poch won in the end. But I'm going to go with tracksuit poch.
Tracksuit Poch. He just pulls it off.
Yeah. Not in a Martin O'Neill tracksuit way. Do you remember Martin O'Neill?
It's not a Pulis.
The club
massive
shop.
white trainers and black tracksuit.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say I'm a man of such superstition that I took the same book with me to Crystal Palace that I did to Leicester, even though there was no chance we're going to read a page, but just because I had to have the same stuff on me in order to get the win. And it worked. So ultimately for me, anything that Pochettino wears that we win I'm wanting exactly that's the same next week. Fair.
He always apparently he wears a suit for the TV games because his mother told him.
Is that right?
Yeah, you'd have to dig around, but he said someone mentioned it about how he wore a suit to Arsenal. Or no, it might have been City at home, and they were saying like, I don't know why it even came up, but he said that my mother has been in touch and said that when you're on TV, you always look really scruffy or something like that. And again, that's just a nice little moment from behind, you know.
And it's almost certainly true. As
well. Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine him still being that mother-fearing kind of South American, you know, man God. Of the world, but comes back and he's still like hit over the head with by his mother. Yeah, I'm going to go with Tracksuit Poch.
I'm going to go with Tracksuit Poch.
Some business.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
Cool. Right, that is all we've got time for this week. Adam, thank you so much for coming down.
Pleasure.
We'll have you on again, certainly before the end of the season. We'll try and get the double act with Bankrupt.
Look, I miss my Eric Dyer to my Dele Alli.
Yeah, you miss the man with
the dossier.
Yeah, which is still one of my favourite moments in this so far, is that in true AVB style, he's turned up with a dossier. Yeah, thanks for coming down, Adam.
Pleasure.
Dan, nice to see you, mate.
Cheers, mate. And you?
There's the clapping again.
Got to get out.
We nearly had it right at the end. That would have been such perfect timing if we'd done it right.
Well,
it
was kind of on my name.
That's true.
It was a point.
Third humble brag of the show.
That's it, yeah. Right. I've been Tom. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Come on, you Spurs.
Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.